Jenny talked to me about us talking together a little bit about what it's like to be adolescent, for lack of a better word, teenage. And you probably wonder how in the world I even know what it's like. But a couple years ago, now it's 5 years ago, I guess, I had begun to think about my 20-year high school class reunion. In fact, I was thinking about it for 2 years before it ever happened. And as I began to ponder that, I don't have any notion why, I began to realize that all those feelings were still fairly close to the surface. And so I'm a writer, so I started to write. So I wrote a book called Who Will Listen to Me?
I read that book yesterday.
Did you read it already?
Yeah.
Well, they tell me that it's for girls younger than I realized. I thought it was for girls who would be like 16 and 17, but evidently it's not. It's for even younger girls too, like 7th and 8th grade too, because there's a range in it. Some things fit better for different ages. So what I thought I'd do today is share some of what's in this book, and then some of what's in a book called Facing Up, which is written for almost anybody, but the kids seem to like it quite well. The kids at our church took it on their hike up to the mountains and used it for devotions quite a bit, they tell me. So if it's okay with you, I'll do it that way today. I'm at a little disadvantage. I have a really bad chest cold, and so my throat, I have two more sessions besides this, so my throat is not so great. I'm glad to have a friend, one close friend who listens and helps me figure things out. I need someone who doesn't leave when I act dumb or when I'm grouchy and who doesn't laugh at me. I need someone who's human around me, makes mistakes too, asks questions like mine, offers suggestions, can tell me true feelings. I'm glad for a person to do things with, talk with, complain to, be quiet with for a change. When I think of friends, I think Jesus must have been the best, the most loyal and loving. Everybody needs a friend, which I think is true. To this day, the girl, woman who was my friend in high school is still a very permanent kind of friend. Now, we never see each other, or seldom see each other. She lives many miles from me. But, and I'll tell you, we differ so much. We're so different politically and on other things like that. But we were so close in high school that bond is still there. And so I love her in spite of whatever differences we have. And I think it's mutual because we always just sort of pick up where we left off when we see each other. It's kind of a neat thing to discover. School seems like a prison is the name of another one. If this really, you know, if I read a title and you really like it and I'm going to go on and skip it, speak up, because I'll be sure to read it then. I was traveling in the car one day when I was a junior. And we must have been complaining in the back seat, I don't know, about everything, you know how you do it. And all of a sudden the mother who was in the front seat turned around and she said, "Oh, kids, these are the best days of your life." I thought, oh, gee, is that all there is? I didn't think they were the best years of our life at all. I sure get tired of adults saying, "Oh, how nice it must be to be young." Do they say that to you?
Yeah.
I don't think being young is so great. Seems to me that everything is mixed up. Just when I feel good about school, I mess up a test, or I have to change my classes. I get excited about sports, and then I forget about curfews. I want to work, but I'm told I'm too young. I feel goofy, and I'm told to act my age. My friends are really important to me, but we let each other down too. My parents are great 1 week, but the next week they crack down. Being this age is confusing. I don't know why adults think I'm so carefree. I'm not. In fact, I'd rather have more responsibility like they do, but I can't decide what I want to do. I wish I didn't have to think about it. I hope I get through this stage pretty soon. Stay with me, okay? Does it fit? There were always popular kids in school, and I don't know if that bothers you, or maybe you're one of them, you know? But it was always kind of a hard thing for me to adjust to, because I thought those kids had more fun. And I was feeling kind of left out most of the time. So I think maybe one of the strongest poems in this book is this one. Lord, if I could wish for anything, I'd want to be popular. I envy kids who feel confident, who date a lot, who know how to make friends and wear clothes. Sometimes my envy's near hate. I despise their success. Lord, I wonder if I really hate myself, not them. I'm disappointed in the way things are. I'm not sure I can or should change. I feel self-conscious and selfish. I have to learn somehow to wait. Someday I may find my own successes, not dates and clothes, but good feelings about life, helping and giving, real love rather than popularity. These are hard times, though. Waiting isn't easy. Help me. The nice part is, of course, now I'm at the other end. I'm 42 years old. I've been to several high school reunions, but the last two have been the best. One was just 2 weeks ago. And I found out that all those popular kids are just regular folks, and they have families, and they're... Well, in fact, the people voted most likely to succeed in my senior class were sitting at the table with me at supper that night, dinner. One is an alcoholic, and she struggles all the time to just sort of stay sober and keep going. And the other fellow, he's really good at computers and stuff, but he's just messed up his life in so many ways. And it's just ironic to me that these were the most likely to succeed people. Or we thought they were. It just shows what you know when you're 16 or 17. And people, the happiest people in some cases are the people who weren't necessarily popular, and some of the most successful ones as well. So you can't tell. You just can't tell in advance. You can't judge a book by its cover. Well, that may be, Lord, but appearance does make a difference. The clothes I wear are important. I feel uncomfortable when I'm not in style. And people notice good looks. The good-looking kids get more attention. But once a cute friend told me that being good-looking isn't always great either. When you're cute or beautiful, you sometimes wonder whether people like you or if they like how you look. I try to keep it straight, Lord. Kindness and understanding are beautiful. You've made some people very attractive, but I seldom notice people's looks when they're listening to me or caring for me. People who love other people are the beautiful ones. Jump in anytime if you have a comment. I'm falling in love. I don't think I ever felt this way before. I look across the room and I see his eyes. He looks straight back at me for a long time, and my stomach flips. I think I'm in love. I want to be near him, even just talking for a minute between classes, or not talking at all. And I can tell he feels the same way. This is a stronger feeling than I've ever had before. My whole body tingles sometimes, and I suddenly sigh out loud when I think of him, and I daydream all the time. Lord, this is wonderful. I don't know what happens next, but I'm thankful this is happening to me. I feel alive. I want to tell you, that's a long-lasting poem. That doesn't end in high school. They're 17 and they're getting married. She's fussing over her wedding gowns and parties, her own sets of towels, and practicing cooking for him. He's working overtime to earn extra money to pay for car repairs. I'm happy for them. She has a pretty ring. They seem to be excited. They've gone together a long time. It seems like they know each other well. A wedding seems a little like a super prom. And it would be nice not to worry about dating, appearances, and all that. But I wonder if I would want to be married now. Married is for a long time. What if I changed my mind? Does it get boring? How much money does it take? I guess I'm not ready yet. I hope they'll be happy. Married is for a long time. Do you know any kids getting married young?
My son's already married. She's 16. I think he's 18.
How's it going for them?
I guess it's okay. Well, she was pregnant. She got pregnant, and that's when they got married. I mean, that's probably not the only reason. I'm sure they had loved it, but I guess it's okay so far. I don't know her that well.
It's a big step. And some kids do just great. And some of the people who are, well, see, the people who were married young when I was in school, they're all grandparents now. You know.
But they're still married.
Yeah, some are. A lot of them were divorced. I'm afraid a lot of them.
Some kids think 25 is too young.
Yes. And as I look back now, too, I was married when I was 22 and a half, I think. And there were just a whole lot of things that I didn't know I was capable of doing yet. I didn't give myself a chance to be independent and really live on my own and have my own job, so that when I got married, it's kind of like marrying somebody who, the other person helps take care of you. They're your other extra hand. You both help each other that way. But then sometimes there are times when you just have to be able to do it on your own. And you've never proved it when you were young. And I'll tell you, when you're older, it's harder to face proving it. You have to do it sometime, though.
It seems like nowadays it's harder to get married young. Like, my mom was married when she was 18, but back then that was okay, I guess. But I think now that women are, you know, it's socially acceptable to be more independent as a woman.
You have to secure a job before you get married.
Yeah. People are waiting a longer time now.
I never lived alone and hardly ever stayed home alone in a house until about a year ago. I bet I could count less than 5 times that I had ever been alone in the house. I was scared to death, right at first. All that stuff about the noise that you hear when you're babysitting, except you have to stay all night. And I thought, gee, that I kind of was robbed of that. Here are all these young friends that I have now in their 20s. They can do that. They don't even bat an eyelash. Well, I do it now too. But how strange not to have experienced that when I was young.
Excuse me, I have to go on a hike now.
Sure. I feel great when I get good grades. It isn't superiority. I don't need to feel better than other people. It's satisfaction from hard work and sacrifice and a sense of relief. The feeling's temporary, though. I just have to start all over again. New projects, more tests, new goals to set. Help me keep it straight, Lord. Grades measure achievement, but learning is ongoing every day. I want to enjoy new ideas because learning's part of growing and changing, not just because I want good grades. I want to be more than a good student. I want to be a complete person. That's kind of hard, I think, when you have grades almost take away that fun part of learning. I know I used to work for grades an awful lot. It's supposed to be a big deal to go on a beer bust. Some kids love to get drunk, but kids aren't really funny when they're drunk. They act silly and get sick and say stupid things. What makes me worry is when they do it over and over again. I never knew kids could be alcoholics, but they can. It isn't just parents who change from just liking a drink to the disease of not being able to say no to alcohol. Kids can also lose their ability to choose. They can become dependent on drinking. I'm glad there are Al-Anon, Alateen, and Alcoholics Anonymous. Those groups can help. Kids can go to them if they have a drinking problem, or if their folks do. Drinking's not a joking matter, Lord. You see a lot of that? Do you hear about it? I think we get pretty hung up on the idea that drugs, you know, kids have to watch out for drugs. But that's exactly what beer is. All kinds of alcohol are really chemicals. And it's hard to keep track of that because the rest of the world kind of laughs at that. You know, we watch, who's that guy on television? Foster Brooks, I think is his name. He pretends he's a drunk all the time. And everyone laughs. You know, it's not funny. It's not very funny at all. Well, here's something we all understand. I always read this to adults. It seems like I never have enough money. There's always something I need. Clothes, stuff for school, hamburgers and malts. I don't want to be greedy. I just want to have what the other kids have. I know I have a lot, more than most people in the world, more than some kids I know. Still, I seem to want more. Help me be sensible. I could manage my money better. I'm not suffering, and sometimes I'm selfish. And sometimes, if I stop to think about it, I like spending money just to have something to do. When I'm down, I feel better if I can spend money for something. It's like buying a present for myself. I suppose it's okay to buy myself presents, but I can't always spend money to feel better. I have to be more secure than that. Keep me honest with myself, and realistic, and unselfish. Do you know the word fickle? You know what fickle means, anybody? What do you think it means?
Well, I mean, I've heard it before
when I was a kid. Yeah, sometimes you hear it. No, fickle is kind of when you don't remain loyal to relationships. You kind of just move, especially with boys, you move kind of from one to another. And sometimes you have two going at once, you know, and that whole thing. It's sort of just not being able to stay steady. Yeah, and I think fickle sort of implies a little leading on. I don't understand myself. I like one boy and then another. I have a big crush on someone, then it wears off and I find someone else to like. I watch a boy, I really like him, and I sit around hoping he'll notice me. And then after a while the feeling's gone. Love is supposed to last. People who are in love seem to stay in love. I just keep changing my mind. Well, maybe that's all right. Every boy I like is a little different from the others. I may settle down to one later on. As long as I don't hurt boys by being dishonest or leading them on, I guess being fickle is natural. I think it's true. It's just part of life. And I think when we brand it, when it is hurting someone else, then that's when we want to take a good look.
Especially you're talking to a younger age group too, and that's all right. You know, find out what different kind of guys are like, especially at that age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know what qualities you want in your lifetime partner.
The more that you know, the more mm-hmm. people you know, the better. I'm convinced of that. It seems like we expect ourselves to act confident and in control all the time. I catch myself pretending I'm not afraid of danger or loneliness or failure or people. But I'm kidding myself, and deep inside I know it. In a way, it's part of why I go to church. I need someplace, someone, who can support me when I'm scared. Who doesn't let me down, who doesn't expect superhuman behavior. In church, I can be more honest with myself. Jesus was reluctant at Gethsemane. Peter and the other disciples were afraid. That comforts me. Fear is part of life. I don't have to let it take over, so I shut myself off from life. But I can't pretend I'm not afraid either. This is another one I read to adults a lot. Because we do have that sense of we ought to look cool all the time. In fact, you know, that's the thing about, remember I was talking to you about popular kids and stuff. They all looked like they really had it made. These kids looked so confident. And we're having such a good time. And then we sit down and talk now. See, we plan these reunions and I'm mixing with the same kids who I wasn't necessarily close friends with before. And I find out they were worried about the same stuff and they thought everybody else looked confident. And we all kind of put on this little mask so that we look okay. In fact, that's a good clue. I was thinking this the other day. I was meeting some new people. And the person who was the most neatly dressed and seemed to have it the most together turned out to be the person who was the least confident. And I should have had a clue. When we don't feel confident, that's when we take a lot of time putting ourselves together so that we look just right. Now that doesn't, you know, that you can't generalize from that. Some people who don't feel confident look like a mess all the time, so it goes both ways. But a lot of times, that's when I was worried about this class reunion, the big thing I wanted to know was I going to wear? Would it be all right what I was wearing? Driving over there that night, I was wondering, gee, I hope I look all right. Holy smokes, you think you get over that when you get to my age. But I forgot as soon as I got there. I blew it. I just cannot act sophisticated like the others. They seem so grown up. I do dumb things. My parents keep reminding me to grow up, be mature, act more sensibly, be responsible. I intend to do all those things, and then I do something really stupid. I don't even mean to, but I do. The other kids think I'm immature, and so do I. Help me figure myself out, Lord. I guess I don't understand everything about myself. I guess I'm growing up gradually. I need patience, and I need help so I learn from my mistakes. Are there any subjects that you know you would like to cover?
What about breaking up?
Oh gosh, I don't know if I have anything. That would have been a good thing to put in here, breaking up.
That's one of the hardest things, I think,
Yeah, it is. You bet it is. And it doesn't change. Separation's very hard. I have one in here on separation. Maybe it'll fit. Yeah, I think it might fit, if I can find it. You know, I noticed that when I was... I noticed this when I was working. When I was going to change a job I'd been in for some time, and of course I'd gotten to be really good friends with the people I worked with. Toward the end of that time, when I knew I had to leave, I began to notice everything crummy about these people. I noticed everything I didn't like. And I finally figured out that what I was doing was, I was trying not to like them so it wouldn't hurt so much when I left. Mm-hmm. And I still do it. It's just kind of a real natural thing. And a person has to work at that. Now, I'm recently divorced, and I could easily have done that. John and I both could easily have done that with each other and then kind of been complaining and all that stuff and angry all the time. And then the rest of the world would say, oh, see, they couldn't get along. So that no wonder they broke up. And see, we would feel kind of justified then that we were doing the right thing. But that isn't the way we were really feeling. Why should we sit around and tear each other down? That isn't what we were feeling. So it was hard to just take the separation and feel it and hurt with it and not make it an angry thing. But this is about all kinds of separations. I never like separation. Even in unpleasant situations, leaving always feels like a loss. Peter knew. His whole body and spirit must have wept to see you dying, leaving him behind. It's not easy separating. We need other people. We miss their presence, if not their affirmation. Well, what does it teach me, Lord? That change may not be comfortable, but it need not destroy. New friends emerge, or familiar relationships are enriched, more dear, as we comfort each other. We learn that death or leaving can be less a loss, more a gain, if we recognize that each new path, like winter, can lead to new growth, rebirth, resurrection. I think that's the real thing. You have to feel sad, and it is hard, and you can't pretend that that is true. But then you have to take that in perspective of the whole life situation and say, okay, I learned something from that. This is what was good in that relationship. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to hang on to the best things that came out of that. John and I both do that. And then we move on and say, now I'll take those good things with me and move on to a new one. And then the other thing you learn is who your friends are. The people who take care of you when you're feeling bad. It's nothing like that. So that it's a growing thing. Painful here, but every time it hurts, you can be pretty sure something's happening. Something positive is happening every time you hurt. It's just hard to see it. Hard to remember. But I think Jesus understood that too. I mean, how terrible it must have been for him to leave all those people behind, knowing that they didn't really understand. Any other ones that you know you want to? I have a couple that help us. Oh yeah, I saw a couple now that I want to use. Lord, I'm angry. Popularity, friends, looks seem more important than quality and honesty. Some people get breaks they don't deserve. It's not what you know, it's who you know. It takes money to make money. Life isn't fair. Some people are born poor. They're always hungry and they never enjoy life. Some people can't walk or see. Some people have unkind parents or no ability to learn. The good die young, they say. Oh, it was a mistake to cough. I feel indignant when I get hurt by unfairness. I feel sad for the others who are hungry or handicapped. I'm angry, angry with the creation that has death and sadness and unfairness. How do I live with it, Lord? I can change some injustice. Help me work at that. I can keep trying, looking for opportunities when things don't work out fairly for me the first time. And I have to leave the rest to you, Lord. I won't give up trying to make the world better, but somehow I have to understand that life is not fair. The world cannot be perfect. Jesus didn't conquer the world like a mighty king. He endured unfairness. He gave to people and the world, even if it meant losing life. Help me be like him. Lots of times you have people say, what are you going to do when you get out of school? I thought if one more person said that to me, because I didn't know. Well, I sort of knew. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. Well, you know, 25 years ago, there were only a few thoughts you could have, teacher and nurse and, you know, that junk. There weren't so many chances. Otherwise, I would have been a pastor a long time ago. Lord, what in the world am I going to do? I feel pressured. Time is moving. Everyone keeps asking me about my plans. It seems like I'm supposed to know, but I don't. All I have in my head are questions. Will I go to college? What will be my job? Do I ever want to get married? If I let myself imagine 20, 40 years ahead, I'm overwhelmed. Mom and Dad have their ideas of what's best for me, but I'm me. I have to decide. Help me be unafraid to risk a decision. A decision isn't forever, but it's a start. Don't let me decide out of rebellion or without thinking for myself. Help me think things through thoroughly, looking at all the possibilities. Help me sort things out. I know you'll be there wherever I go. I think that's one thing that's really important as I was reading this, that idea that if I make a decision, I can't change my mind. Which isn't true. We can always change it. Well, marriage is one of those tricky ones. It's hard to change your mind. It causes a lot of pain. But if you start school and it's a bomb, you can quit for a while and go back or start to work. And that's not such a successful thing, change jobs. The older we get, I think the more locked in we get to ideas that we have to stay in the place where we have found ourselves. And the happiest people I know are people who are able to make those changes when it's important for them. So a lot of people over at seminary now with me that are, say, in their 40s, men and women, who've all of a sudden they decided they want to be pastors. Well, it's a crazy time in life. It would be a lot easier if you were 21, but what the heck? It's it's exciting. And they love school. You know, they really enjoy school more than they would have when they were 21.
Sometimes it's hard to change because we think we failed, you know? Mm-hmm. We've been scared.
I've known a lot of people that reach their senior year in college and realize that the program they're in is something they really don't enjoy anymore, but are too afraid to change.
Because of all the money?
Money and the sense of failure.
The time they put into.
Yeah, and then everything else. And so they got into a career that they're not happy with. Whereas I've changed my mind so many times, and I finally found my place.
But it doesn't stop. I mean, people forever will ask you, well, what are your plans? And you don't stop not knowing. You know, I'm out of college and people ask me, well, what are you going to do after you leave Holden Village? I don't know. I have no idea. You just have to live with it. And like Judy said, you have to remember that God is there and you can't change your mind. It'll be okay.
Yeah. And it's a terrible thing to be in something where you feel locked in. And I think that men experience that more than women in our culture right now. Because once they get in a career, they have that financial thing they're worried about, the time they've spent, and they feel these obligations. If they have a family, it's even heightened. And that whole failure thing, men aren't supposed to fail. Well, women do that too to themselves, but I think for men it's really strong. And I feel for them because they should be able to change too. I hurt my parents. I feel guilty I hurt my parents. Not just today, but many times. I'm selfish or stubborn, late or moody. I say whatever I feel and I hurt them. I'm sorry, Lord, I want to be independent. And sometimes that gets the best of my judgment. I know I could be more patient and kind. Help me do the hardest thing of all. Lord, help me to tell them I'm sorry. Isn't that hard?
Yeah, that hits home. You know, sometimes we're so young, we make quick decisions, and you know, they try to slow us down and steer us the other way, and you know, it's just hard to face up that parents are usually right.
It's also hard when you make a mistake, and you know you made a mistake, and you're going to go, like, let's say you did something, and they found out about it before that you could talk to them about it. And you want to say you're sorry, and then as soon as you come through the door, they start yelling at you. There's no way you're going to say you're sorry because you don't want to, you know, let down your barrier. Like, you just,
it's true.
They start yelling at you. You don't want to.
Which is a good lesson as a parent, too. If you are being critical, you're not going to get the apology, probably. People are going to be defensive. Mm-hmm. And they're going to defend what they said, even when they know they're wrong. So that's true in all human relationships, I think. I think I have one about defensive in here. Someone offered helpful advice. I bristled and scurried through my mind to explain my choice, my error. I was defensive. I protect myself from admitting wrong, sometimes because I need to feel right, more often because I cannot bear to be wrong again. Admitting another wrong would add to my lengthy list of imperfections, which I tally daily. I'm defensive because I do not forgive myself.
I want to say something about, not the last two poems, but one before, about thinking about the future. A lot of times I'm under so much pressure and everything that I don't live day by day. I'm always saying, I can't wait for this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we miss it. We all do that. It's hard to break out of that, too. You know, when you were saying that, it occurred to me, maybe that's why some of the best, some of the deepest thinkers religiously were people who were disciplined. And in the morning, I suppose, they would say their prayers. And then I don't know what their day would be like. It'd be different for everybody. And at night, they would say their prayers. And that would give some sense of this is one day. And they're not necessarily looking past the next day. But that kind of discipline would keep them in focus. Well, that's a new thought. It's very unrealistic to suggest that I don't worry. Look at all the fuel available to burn in worry fires. Kids and drugs, peace and war, traffic jams and rising interest rates. It's a wonder I have any strength left. On the other hand, when has worry successfully replaced action or produced energy for solutions? When has worry untangled traffic or given me a good night's sleep? Worry is my stubborn need to try to solve or understand, to control all things. Foolish me, that's your job, not mine. I think to save my voice, I'll have to wrap up with one last one. Excuse me. I'm not always happy. Is it all right to be sad? Is sadness something I should avoid? Does feeling sad mean something's wrong with me? God promises peace, but what is peace? Should life be smooth? If turmoil comes, should I run away? Sometimes I experience the fruits of kindness, joy, peace, love. Peace usually comes with kindness and love. But once, after I yelled at the kids who were cruel, I felt all peaceful inside. How can I be sure what's loving? To speak, to be silent, to take a serious step, or to wait and hold back? What if I never know? What if I make a mistake? How will I feel peaceful then? I can test what I do by what Jesus did. Jesus did not act helpless. He took steps to change things. Loved openly, cried, got angry. He listened, confronted, trusted, knew the Father. And he forgave everyone, even me. What a powerful example for me. Thank you, Lord, for understanding and for showing me the way. I guess what that's saying is that life is full of all these hills and valleys and all of our misgivings about ourselves and our friends and anybody else we meet. And it's just part of it. It's part of the process of growing. And when we don't quite know what to do and where to go, we have the life of Jesus to give us some sort of a center, something on which to build. And we can observe what it was Jesus did and hear what it was Jesus said to people like us and to other people. And that gives us some sort of sense of what to do next. Which is kind of nice because it helps us get through life.